Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm going to share with you some 9/11 and related news updates and also tell you about the upcoming Progressive Movie Night on April 18th. We'll be showing the movie Operation Terror. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. And I'm going to share with you some thoughts and comments about a recent letter posted by Congressman John Larson of the 1st District in the Journal Inquirer. So first, let's start out with some 9/11 news. Last week, you heard the interview with two local members of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. One was Wayne Costi from Connecticut, and the other was Mike Figa from the Boston area. And they were sharing what Architects and Engineers is doing. They have many projects going on. And the big one is called Tip the Planet, which is a plan to run massive billboards and banners in subways, on billboards on major highways, etc., in the month of September 2013, to mark the 12th anniversary. And they started with an ad campaign where they requested people to submit ads that they created as a contest, and they received over 328 submissions. And you can see them by going to their website, ae911truth.org, and the public could vote on these. And the voting ended on Saturday, April 6th. And I really enjoyed looking at all of the ads and seeing all the creativity and the great response they had for this project. Here are just a few of the banners that were submitted. The first one says, "If you believe that Arabs did 9/11, then I have some of Saddam's nuclear weapons to sell you." And then the next one says, "9/11 changed everything. So will the truth." And here's another one, "The laws of physics are not conspiracy theory." I kind of like that one. And then another one says, "Isaac Newton would immediately see 9/11 as a complete lie. Why can't we? He's done the math." And then there's another one that says, "The world knows, do you?" And then the last one I'm going to share with you says, "The 9/11 Commission Report, the lie heard around the world." That's just some of the 328 that you'll see on the website. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Also, the number of architects and engineers signing the petition on the website, ae911truth.org, just keeps growing. I check it every few days, and I'm just amazed at how quickly it's growing now. So they're up to 1,843 architects and engineers now demanding a new investigation, saying that the official story of 9/11 is fraudulent based on the physics. So they're hoping to have 2,000 by the 12th anniversary. So if you are an architect or an engineer and you support 9/11 Truth, then please go to their website and sign up so we get those numbers up there higher and higher. If we want to be heard and make a change, that's always helpful to have those numbers in support. And also, if you're not an architect or an engineer, you can go to the website and sign up. There's over 16,000 people who signed up that don't have the architectural or engineering background but still believe that we've been lied to and want a new investigation. So you can also sign up that way. In addition to the architects and engineers who are demanding a new investigation into 9/11, there are many celebrities who support the 9/11 Truth Movement and who are supporting the Architects and Engineers Tip the Planet project. Two of them are Ed Asner and Daniel Sunjata, and they'll be announcing more of them as we get closer to the 12th anniversary in September. Also, in connection with the 12th anniversary, there's going to be a march in Washington, D.C. on September 11th, so stay tuned for more on that on future broadcasts. Again, lots happening. And there's also a group of us putting on a 9/11 conference in Washington, D.C. on the 12th anniversary, and it'll be on the weekend of September 14th and 15th. So stay tuned for more on that. The website should be up within the next couple of weeks. So there's lots happening, and I want to ask people, if you're concerned with the lies that we've been told about 9/11, and if you're concerned about the consequences of that false flag event, like the loss of our civil liberties, the NDAA Act, the increase in homeland security, and then the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, the droning of Pakistan, Yemen, what we're doing in Syria, Libya, all of that is connected to 9/11. So please get active if you haven't been, and if you have been active, please keep it going so that we can reach that tipping point. And the money we've spent and continue to spend on the 9/11 wars have cost us over $1 trillion by some estimates. And our economy would certainly look a whole lot better if we had that money to spend on domestic needs. And the aftermath of 9/11 has been disastrous for most of the world. The only ones benefiting, and benefiting quite handsomely, are the bankers and corporate leaders that make up the 1%. And there's a direct connection between 9/11 and the many wars we're involved in around the world that have nothing to do with protecting us from terrorism. In fact, in Syria, we're working with Al-Qaeda. Here's General Wesley Clark in a 2007 speech discussing what I would now call the 9/11 wars.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, No. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
And now let's move on to more 9/11 news updates. In the UK, on February 25th of this year, Tony Rook went to court in Horsham in the UK. He was refusing to pay the TV license, which is used to fund the BBC, on the grounds that paying would constitute funding an organization which was supporting terrorism. The BBC has refused to address any of the issues regarding the official explanation of 9/11 and has actually produced programs such as the 9/11 Conspiracy Road Trip, which could only be described as blatant propaganda. On the day in court, Tony wasn't allowed to show his evidence, but Tony is now organizing an event in which he will show the 3 hours of prepared evidence to a jury of 12 specially selected members of the general public and a large audience. And he will produce a film of this event. And if you want to learn more about this, you can go to his new website, which is called Killing Auntie Films, killingauntiefilms.co.uk. So I'm going to play you a clip of Tony and Ian Henschel and a few others discussing this court case. It was filmed on the street, so the sound quality isn't perfect, but I think you can understand everything. So here it is.
I said, "Look, I'm not paying your license under Section 15, Article 3 of the Terrorism Act." And they went through the procedure. I got the court summons. I went to court. They asked me if I was guilty. I said, "No, I'm not guilty of having an appropriate license, because the license isn't appropriate, because I'll be funding terrorism, because I know the BBC has covered up the true events of the day." And eventually we arrive here today, and the result has been, I have to say, a fair judge in my opinion, that I have not been convicted. I have no fine. Court costs £200, which you guys have very generously donated to. And I have to behave myself and get a TV license, of course, which I'll be running down the post office tomorrow to buy. But hopefully we've set a little precedent here where it might encourage people to go and do the same thing and, you know, go to their police, tell them about today, give them the evidence. West Sussex Police have said they're investigating it, which they're obliged to do, because the BBC had prior knowledge of a terrorist event, which under, I think it's Section 38 of the Terrorism Act, they should have reported, which they didn't. And they've since given us this impossible flannel about World Trade Center 7 collapsing due to an office fire, which even in the NIST report says fell at free fall speed for eight floors in 2.5 seconds. Now that is absolutely impossible without a controlled demolition being involved. Absolutely impossible. There's no arguments around it. Don't let anyone else tell you otherwise, because they're saying Isaac Newton is wrong.
One of the reasons that Tony Rook is challenging the BBC is because BBC reporter Jane Standley reported on 9/11 that the Salomon Brothers building, which is World Trade Center Building 7, had fallen 23 minutes before it actually fell. In the video, you can see Building 7 standing behind her as she's reporting that it's already fallen. This indicates prior knowledge, and there was never a satisfactory explanation from the BBC as to why they knew that ahead of time. And now back to the audio clip.
I'm Peter Drew. I'm representing architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth as the UK facilitator. Today, I was going to give evidence as part of myself and two other individuals back in 2011 lodged some official complaints with the BBC about two of the documentaries that they showed in 2011 as part of the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And the BBC, as Ian Henshaw has just described, they have very strict requirements through their Royal Charter and their agreement and their editorial guidelines, where they have to present information that is impartial and accurate, and they are required to correct any mistakes that they make. And one of the very important pieces of evidence that we were going to present today was in 2007, the BBC, in one of their documentaries, suggested that Building 7 did not come down at free fall speed, and said that the scientists and the architects who were suggesting that it had come down at free fall speed were wrong. But then in 2008, we had the official investigators who came out and actually then said, well, no, Building 7 did come down at free fall speed, which is a huge statement to make, because we know that it can only come down at free fall speed through controlled demolition. So the BBC made a very, very big mistake in 2007 by saying that freefall had not occurred.
The BBC was incompetent, verging on dishonest. Oh, let's rephrase that, dishonest. I was the leading author on 9/11 when they did their conspiracy files programmes. I never had a phone call from them. Now, you know, they might have disagreed with me, they might have disliked me, but as they're paid by the public to investigate impartially and give a full account of what happens, and if they're doing a film about so-called conspiracy theories, then that obliges them to talk to anybody who's in the position that I was. I'd been serialised in the Daily Mail. Instead, they got some guys from America who had some pretty cookie ideas and presented them to the public as the face of 9/11 investigators, who they call conspiracy theorists.
You've published two books on 9/11, is that right?
Yeah, 9/11 Revealed, which was serialised in the Daily Mail and sold tens of thousands of copies, and 9/11 The New Evidence, which is the update on that book, which was a very detailed look into the paper trail, particularly of the 9/11 attacks and the role of the FBI and the CIA in facilitating the 9/11 attacks.
And yet the BBC had no interest in talking to you?
They had no interest in talking to me. They didn't even phone me up. They didn't email me. Even the people who made one of the propaganda films, Flight 93, they spent 3 hours talking to me. They didn't take a blind bit of notice of anything I said, but they did go to the trouble of phoning and talking. The BBC had a lot of resources. They don't want to know. They were grossly dishonest in their investigations of the 9/11 attacks, and that's what I was here to say to the court today.
Unfortunately, the court today, the judge didn't let us demonstrate all the evidence. We had some very good witnesses: Tony Farrell, a former intelligence officer for South Yorkshire Police; Niels Harrit, eminent scientist from Copenhagen; Ray Savage, former counter-terrorism officer; Peter Drew, wonderful chap, coordinated the campaign against the BBC trying to find out about Building 7, which they refused to talk about. Adrian Mallett, former firefighter, engineer. I had a good load of witnesses lined up, but we weren't allowed to present them. That said, the judge has seen the evidence. He said he's seen the evidence. So we now know that for a fact that one judge in this country is very, very aware of what happened on 9/11. And I have no conviction.
Can you have the judge's name, please?
Judge Stephen Nichols, I believe. Do you know him?
Oh, yes.
Yes. No, a nice chap, it has to be said. It has to be said.
Yes.
And towards the end of the case, for anyone who wasn't in the room, I did kick off a little bit because, I mean, it does come down to a question of morality. Do you keep funding these bloody paedophile rings at the BBC? Yeah. I know this is It's sub judice, but I think it's been fairly well established that what's going on. And do we fund an organisation that tells us the impossible, that Building 7 fell because of an office fire? It's utter crap, and we should stop paying them, go to your police station, go to your lawyer, wherever you have to go. I wouldn't bother petitioning your MPs, to my opinion, but go to the police, tell them. Sussex Police have said it's with divisional intelligence. We'll get it to other divisional intelligence as well, wherever you live. Get them there and do your best, you know, because it's not an imprisonable offence, TV licensing, and I got the lowest possible punishment today. I didn't get convicted. The judge took the stuff seriously, and so he should, because you can't get any more serious than Isaac Newton. But, you know, it's an immutable law of science, and the BBC have been lying. And if they want to take me to court for saying that they're liars, fine, we'll go back.
So there you have it, our 9/11 truth friends in the UK holding their media accountable by not paying their BBC TV license fees in order to get into court to be able to present the evidence that disproves the official story of 9/11. Very clever. And speaking of accountability, let's talk about the Iraq War for a moment. I recently got an email from Democratic Congressman John Larson of the 1st District in Connecticut, and he was sharing a recent letter he wrote that was published in the Journal Inquirer on March 23, 2013. The letter called for the support of our veterans who served in Iraq, and I couldn't agree with him more about that. He praised their families for their courage and strength and their speaking out, and he also praised the efforts of people who protested the war in Iraq. And he called for an engaged citizenry, and I couldn't agree with him more. He also refers to the war in Iraq as a mistake and a blunder. Let me read you those passages from his letter. The first one goes like this, quote, 10 years after this mistake of historic proportions, the most important takeaway is to have an active and engaged citizenry. And then he goes on to say, their advocacy ensures our service members and their families receive the services they deserve and stops blunders like the war in Iraq from being repeated. While I agree that we need an engaged and active citizenry, does Congressman Larson really think that the war in Iraq was a mistake, a blunder? It was a well-planned out war of aggression, giving the aggressors everything they wanted. Iraqi oil is in Western hands, and they privatized almost everything in Iraq, again, to Western corporations. And Iraq is no longer a bloc to Western and Israeli aggression in the Middle East. So a mistake? I'm sorry, Congressman Larson, but I don't think so. It was a war crime and not a mistake and not a blunder. In fact, a criminal court in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, found Bush, Blair, Rumsfeld, and others guilty of mass murder and war crimes. So, Congressman Larson, rather than asking the citizenry to be more engaged, which isn't a bad idea, but we were engaged in the lead-up to the Iraq War, and the government and the media ignored us. So in addition to an engaged citizenry, I would like to suggest that Congressman Larson pursue holding the war criminals accountable. But the congressman is a little late in hoping to prevent a repeat of Iraq. Since that invasion, we've been involved in the destruction of Libya and now Syria, and we've been militarily involved in Pakistan and Yemen and in several African countries in addition to Libya. And now here are the last two paragraphs of John Larson's letter. There is considerable work to do now that the war has ended, and it will take our neighbors showing up at various forms of dissent, discourse, dialogue, and conversation to make a change for a better future. We no longer have a draft, but we should have a common call to public service for all our citizens so that we remain involved and committed to the liberties and freedoms that are often taken for granted. That is the role of an informed and knowledgeable citizenry, and it remains the obligation of our elected representatives to engage the public in the major issues of our day. This responsibility should not rest with our armed services alone. It is the responsibility of every single one of us. So the congressman states that he believes it's the obligation of our elected representatives to engage the public in the major issues of our day. Yet, when I and others have tried to talk to him about 9/11, which is the justification for all of these wars, he becomes either mocking or turns a deaf ear. I've tried to set up a meeting with him several times to discuss my concerns and have been put off, and my phone calls have not been returned. So much for wanting an engaged citizenry. I guess he only wants citizens to be engaged around non-controversial issues like veterans' benefits, which I'm guessing most people support. But to look at the causes of the wars and to actually hold anyone accountable for these war crimes, he doesn't seem too interested in that. But enough on the congressman. The sad fact is that he's probably better than many of the other members of Congress. At least he voted against the invasion of Iraq. I have to give him that. And now, for some other 9/11 news, there were two new books on 9/11 that I'm aware of that came out in 2012. One is called Black 9/11, Money, Motive, and Technology by Mark Gaffney. He has some interesting thoughts on the financial motivation behind 9/11 that have to do with the financial fraud in the early 1990s used to bring down the Soviet government, which I had never heard of before, and involves large corporations, the 1%, if you will. I don't agree with all of his conclusions, but there was enough interesting and new material in it that I would recommend reading it. And again, the book is called Black 9/11, Money, Motive, and Technology by Mark Gaffney. The second book I want to tell you about today is called The Big Bamboozle by Philip Marshall. And let me just tell you a little bit about Philip Marshall first. He's a veteran airline captain and former government special activities contract pilot. Beginning with his role in the 1980s as a Learjet captain, first as part of a Drug Enforcement Administration sting on Pablo Escobar, and later in the covert arming of the Nicaraguan Contras, Marshall has studied and written 30 years' worth of covert government special activities and the revolving door of Wall Street tricksters, media moguls, and their well-funded politicians. He's a leading aviation expert on the September 11th attack, as well as a masterful storyteller. And now I'm going to read part of what it says on the back cover of the book. Veteran airline captain Philip Marshall is not buying George Bush's war on terror, or the raid on Osama bin Laden, or the phony confession videos. In fact, after a comprehensive 10-year study of the 9/11 attack, he's not buying that bin Laden was involved at all. From his perspective as a Boeing 767 captain and former special activities pilot, Marshall straps the reader into the cockpit of hijacked commercial airliners to tell the story of the most sophisticated terrorist attack in history. He explains in layman's terms how novice pilots at the controls of massive guided missiles were able to beat United States Air Force fighters to iconic targets with advanced maneuvering, daring speed, and a kamikaze finish. But as Marshall explains, the skill and inside knowledge the feat required virtually eliminates Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden as the tactical planners. So then, who pulled off this incredible air raid? That's what you are about to learn. This book becomes all the more interesting when we learn what happened to Philip Marshall. In January of 2013, he either committed suicide and killed his two children, as the official story is saying, or he was murdered along with his two children and the family dog. Journalist Wayne Madsen went out to California, where Philip Marshall lived, to investigate and discovered that there's probably more to this story than what the government is telling us. He was also working on another book that he said was even more damning than this one. So who knows? But anyway, he died in January along with his two teenage children and the family dog. And according to Wayne Madsen, it looks really suspicious that it was not a murder-suicide as the local officials are claiming. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to Wayne Madsen's website, the Wayne Madsen Report. Or if you just Google Philip Marshall, you'll also find more about it. And again, in terms of the book, The Big Bamboozle, I think it's worth reading. I don't agree with all of his conclusions, but he's certainly got really good information in there, and it's worth reading. And again, that's The Big Bamboozle by the late Philip Marshall. And on the subject of books, Kevin Ryan is writing a book called Another 19, which will be coming out before the 12th anniversary of 9/11 in September. He names 19 government and corporate officials who were more likely to have had something to do with 9/11 than the 19 alleged hijackers. Some of the names he writes about are Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Perle, George Tenet, to name just a few. To see the full list, and read some of his research for the book, you can go to his website, which is another19.com, and the 19, the digits. So another19.com. Kevin Ryan does very serious research, so I'd really encourage you to check that out. He also has another website called digwithin.org, where you can find his articles and other research. And on a sad note, Jane Polosino died on February 21st of a stroke. She lost her husband on 9/11 and was active in seeking the truth of what happened. She was a member of NYC CAN and was involved in the Remember Building 7 campaign, and actually spoke here in West Hartford in 2011 at our Remember Building 7 conference. Maybe some of you remember seeing her. She was also in a TV ad that the Remember Building 7 people put on, and I'm going to play that for you now. She's the first voice you hear, and then she appears in it several times throughout. She was also in the movie Experts Speak Out. So here she is, along with several other family members.
I lost my husband.
My son.
My uncle.
My nephew. September 11th, 2001.
Most people don't know a third tower fell that day.
The government says fire brought it down.
The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fires.
I, along with 1,400 other architects and engineers,
have found the government's conclusion to be physically impossible.
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 We need the truth about what happened that day.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org.
Why it fell, why it matters, and what you can do.
If you'd like to hear the speech she gave at the Remember Building 7 conference here in 2011, you can go to the website ct911truth.org. The whole conference is archived there. Jane Polosino will really be missed. As I mentioned, Jane was in the movie 9/11, Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. And this movie is now being aired on the mainstream TV in Australia. Apparently, it's getting lots of airtime. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to the website ae911truth.org. And another piece of news, peace activist Cindy Sheehan is biking from California to Washington, D.C. on a Tour de Peace. And if you'd like to join her for part of that or to learn more about what she's doing, you can search for Tour de Peace or Cindy Sheehan on the internet. She left California on April 4th and expects to arrive in Washington, D.C. on July 2nd. And now I'd like to close the show by telling you about our progressive movie night coming up on Thursday, April 18th. We'll be showing the movie Operation Terror. It's a docudrama, and it creates a scenario of how 9/11 might have unfolded from beginning to end, including a lot of the available evidence out there. I think it's an excellent movie, and I hope you'll come out and join us to see it. It will be on Thursday, April 18th at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. And there's free parking in Lot B. I hope to see you there. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.